This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moskowain. The conflicts in Bosnia-Herzegovina between Serbs, Croats, and Muslims go back many centuries, beginning in the 12th century with the Turkish occupation of the region, through the Nazi occupation of Yugoslavia in the 40s, and the establishment of communist rule under Tito. Since the collapse of communism, Bosnia has been embroiled in a violent civil war, with Serbs bent on cleansing Croats and Muslims from the region. We called Toma Loginovic today to help us understand the roots of the current conflict, to shed some light on the level of animosity between these ethnic groups. Loginovic is a literary scholar, writer, cultural historian, and professor of Slavic languages and literature at the University of Wisconsin. I asked him if Muslims stand apart from other ethnic groups in the region.
I think that, you know, if you would, for example, go today to Sarajevo, you would not be able to tell who is a Muslim, who is a Serb, who is a Croat. I mean, maybe now you would because they all wear uniforms, but if you went before the conflict, people were so integrated and Sarajevo was sort of a model city of multi-ethnic tolerance and a city in which, you know, multicultural existence was really at its best. There was really no way of telling, you know, except you could tell maybe by the names, you know, because they would usually have beg or aga, or they would have some sort of maybe an Islamic name. But otherwise, you know, I don't think that there was, you know, any other way of distinguishing, you know, between each other, especially in the cities. Maybe in the rural areas you could tell by the dress, you know, the people wearing traditional folk dress or costume.
Does that mean there have been many mixed marriages?
Oh, there have been, you know, many, many mixed marriages. I mean, considering that these basically are the same people. I mean, the Serbs, the Croats, and the ethnic Muslims come from the same Slavic ethnic stock. And, you know, during centuries they have also been mixing between themselves, mixing with the Turks, so that, you know, any talk of ethnic purity is an absolute fiction and an absurdity. You know, you cannot create such a thing in 20th century Europe. It is absolutely ridiculous.
The Muslims in Bosnia-Herzegovina, what kind of ties do they have to the rest of the Islamic world?
I think that, you know, right now they have very strong ties to the Islamic world, especially now that they feel sort of betrayed by the West. They have, I think, ties with almost all the Islamic countries. And during the communist rule, Tito actually tried to give them more autonomy and recognize them as a nation in the beginning of 1960s to sort of have sort of a showcase Muslim community for the Arabic countries during his, you know, attempts to gain control over the non-aligned movement that he was the founder of.
Let me pick up on something you were saying about the ethnic cleansing, and you're saying this really comes from nowhere, that it's not part of the history of this region. Where then did it come from?
Well, you know, this is the whole problem and the complexity of the Balkans. As I said, Balkans is the place of one of the most intense ethnic and cultural hybridization of mixing of culture that produced, you know, amazing works of art, you know, and amazing cultural artifacts that are really nowhere to be found in the world. You know, if you went to Sarajevo, you know, it has on the same main square the mosque, the Catholic cathedral, the Orthodox church, and the synagogue, you know, and these four major religions are to be found in one city. You know, it is sort of a true, sort of universal city, you know, although it was, you know, so far away and in the periphery of Europe. So, you know, this talk of, you know, ethnic homogeneity, I think, you know, comes from sort of regressive drives, you know, among the various nationalist groups within the country who are trying to, I think, carve up sort of a political space for themselves.
Well, do you see this as a religious war, a war of revenge?
Well, you know, you have to understand it in the Balkans, as I said before, you know, religion is the major factor in the creation of national consciousness, you know. So, you know, those two things really fall together because there is no other way to distinguish between people but by their religious affiliation. So, I mean, the Croats and the Serbs and the Muslims all look the same. They are of the same ethnic stock. But because they have accepted a certain religion, they declare themselves as Serbs, Croats, or the ethnic Muslims.
Why do you think the Serbs have targeted Muslims when it appears that Serbs and Croatians have a darker history together?
I think, you know, because they have not targeted the Muslims specifically. I think they are driving out from the territories that they hold, both the Muslims and the Croats, you know, trying to create a territory that they can claim their own. And I think in a way, the other nation is now seen as the enemy, you know, which is, I think, very wrong and absolutely ridiculous.
Can you explain to us the level of violence, the fact that civilians are targeted, that school buses with children inside are shot at, that food and medical supplies are kept out by force?
Oh, it's absolutely disgusting. You know, I'm shocked. You know, every day I open the paper. You know, I can't eat my breakfast or anything. You know, I have two small children. When I watch the suffering of little children or the civilians there, I'm just completely appalled, you know, and
can you explain it?
You know, it's really hard to explain violence, you know, and since this is a war, you know, and since, you know, this is happening basically in one of the most probably volatile, you know, regions and the most, you know, intermixed, you know, regions of the world. I think we have to take into account certain psychological aspects, you know, and maybe I'll try to explain and go in depth by doing that. I think that, in a sense, you know, people tend to, you know, recognize their shortcomings and see their dark side in the other nation, and by sort of exterminating or getting rid of that, let's call it shadow, in themselves, you know, in projecting it onto the other, they attempt to sort of purify themselves.
That is a very psychological explanation.
Yes. I mean, there is no other one that I can really come up with for such a level of violence, really.
My guest today on Fresh Air is Toma Longinovic, and he's a literary scholar, writer, cultural historian. He teaches at the University of Wisconsin. He's lived in this country for 10 years. Before that, he lived in Yugoslavia. We're talking about the current conflict which is going on in Bosnia-Herzegovina. We're talking about the history of the various ethnic groups in that region. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Toma Longinovic, and he teaches at the University of Wisconsin and lived in Yugoslavia until 10 years ago and has family and friends that are still living there. Let me pick up on what you were talking about and even ask you what you're hearing from your friends, from people that are still back in what is Bosnia-Herzegovina.
You know, I did not have any direct contact with the people there because, you know, the telephone lines are cut. But before the conflict, I had several friends, you know, there who were, both Serbs and ethnic Muslims and Croats. And I would send them, you know, they would want me to send them Sports Illustrated or, you know, some pictures of rock groups and stuff like this, the people that I have met while I was in the army. And, you know, I kept writing to these people, and we were great friends, but I have no way of knowing now where they are and, you know, how they are doing. I also have some family in Sarajevo, and even my family in Belgrade has no way of getting in touch with them. We really don't know what is with them.
So does that mean you're combing the newspaper, looking through photographs as they come up in the U.S. media to see any sign of your own family?
Yeah, exactly. We are just, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what is going on and where are these people, because, you know, basically the links with the outside world are cut, you know, and who knows what is happening in there.
Well, how do you fill in those blanks?
Oh, it's just horrifying. You know, you fill it with anxiety and horror and apprehension, you know, that it will always be some sort of bad news, you know. It's just terrible.
So you have family that in Sarajevo right now as we speak?
Yeah, I think I have some distant relatives, and I know that people of my generation from that family have fled to Switzerland and with their young children. And I know that the older people who, you know, my cousins have actually stayed there, you know, and they, you know, my younger cousins were trying to get them out, and they would say, no, we have to stay here, you know, defend our home, our life is here, and so on, and this type of thinking, you know, this kind of very intransigent thinking, I think, is to a large extent what is contributing to what is happening. Nobody is willing to sort of to give up what's their own, and that's understandable. And you know, so now it's going to be very, very difficult.
Let me ask you a little bit more about your family. And you are your family is Serbian, and I realize these are probably distinctions that people in this country make more than you might make about yourself. Is that right?
Absolutely, because, you know, when I first came, you know, to this country, and I came as a Yugoslavian, at that time that meant that I identified with the whole, you know, country, you know, that I was on very friendly terms with all the nations, you know, within the country, and, you know, the Serbian identity just meant some sort of ethnic, cultural, you know, adherence, you know, to a sort of a heritage in a way. And, you know, coming here immediately, you know, you start meeting people from the emigre community, and they all identify as Serbs or Croats because most of them sort of fled after World War II. And you immediately start being pulled into these camps, you know, for that this or that reason. And this was something that was very foreign to me. And, you know, right now, you know, I rather prefer to think about myself as a person without a state, you know, and, you know, person who was just by accident of birth born there. And I will definitely not seek citizenship of the rump Yugoslavia because I don't identify with the policies of Mr. Milosevic and his politicians there.
By not identifying yourself that way, does that then free you to speak as you wish?
Well, I think so. You know, I have the luxury of not being there. But, you know, in Serbia, there is very vocal opposition to Mr. Milosevic. And as we speak, the Belgrade University buildings have been occupied by students for 4 months now who are protesting and demanding his immediate resignation. There was set up a group of intellectual opposition to him called the Serbian Democratic Movement, who are asking for his immediate resignation and so on. Because if anybody should be held accountable for the breakup of Yugoslavia, that is probably Mr. Milosevic, who managed somehow to use the nationalist rhetorics for the first time in the Yugoslavian political space in 1987, when he crushed the uprising of the Albanians in Kosovo. And this has brought him, you know, to power. And the side effect of this was the awakening of Serbian nationalism, which, you know, gave this encouragement to the Serbs in Croatia and Bosnia to sort of seek solutions by picking up arms, which was a very, very wrong signal. And instead of all the countries of former Yugoslavia immediately recognizing each other and trying to work out a political solution by forming some sort of economic or a customs union, you know, we now have this horrifying war going on there.
Let me just ask your reaction as you read about the coverage in this country about the fighting, the history of the fighting in Bosnia. Do you have a general impression about how the media is writing about this war?
You know, well, you know, it is quite obvious, I think, to everybody, you know, who reads that, you know, media is clearly favoring the nations seeking independence, while the Serbs are, to a certain extent, being demonized in the media. And again, you know, who else to blame but Mr. Milosevic and his policies? He has, out of the people, you know, the Serbian people who have been always on the side of the Allies in both world wars, who are sort of the Piedmont of the Balkans, who united and created Yugoslavia, he has turned them into the pariahs of the world, you know, with his completely absurd policies of trying to sort of prevent, you know, other nations from being having a right to self-determination and from inciting the Serbs in Croatia and Bosnia to rebellion.
Well, if Milosevic and others in power are removed in one way or another by, we'll say, United Nations forces, do you think then the country can be stitched back together? Or do you think the violence has been too deep and too profound to really allow that to happen?
Oh, I think that, you know, the Yugoslavia as a unitary state is a completely dead idea. You know, the dream has been destroyed, you know, the moment Slovenia seceded in 1991. But I think that there is definitely a necessity for some sort of, as I said before, economic and cultural cooperation between this new independent state, maybe something along the model of Commonwealth of Independent States, because they will just not be economically viable. I don't think how they will survive. They will, and they are, being turned into the underdeveloped world, into the third world in Europe, I'm afraid.
In looking at the conflict and the history of this particular conflict, would you say that different generations look at it differently because they have a different history with it? People, Yugoslavs who went through World War II might look at it differently than people like you who were born in the 50s.
Oh, I'm absolutely sure of that. Yeah, I know that the generation of our parents and grandparents definitely remembers all the atrocities of the Second World War, and that we have somehow, you know, by growing up in this Yugoslav nation, completely, we were not exposed to this kind of hatred or, you know, this kind of violence. And I think that, as I said, this is just reopening old wounds for them. Every now and then I would come across a comment. I remember my when I lived for a part of my life there in Zagreb in Croatia, and I had a Croatian girlfriend. And my grandfather would always tell me, you know, how can you live in Zagreb and have a Croatian girlfriend when they killed 750,000 of Serbs just 30 years ago? And I would just laugh at him. I would say, oh, that's all over. That's all the matter of the past. That will never happen again. And now, you know, to a certain extent, I see that he was referring back to a history that was always alive within him.
And might be occurring again now.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is happening. And that's why I said that we need a new type of thinking, you know, a thinking that is not based on revenge but on forgiveness.
Well, I thank you very much, Toma Longinovic, for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Toma Longinovic is a literary scholar, writer, cultural historian, and professor of Slavic languages and literature at the University of Wisconsin. He has several books, including a novel called Moment of Silence.